Some months, you're flooded with jobs and make multiple placements. Other months, a big fat zero. This feast and famine cycle isn't just stressful, it's holding you back and keeping you from real predictable growth. Here's the good news. There's a reason it's happening, and you can fix it. The 7-Figure Freedom Scorecard is a free tool designed for recruitment business owners. In less than 10 minutes, it evaluates your firm across the 6 key pillars of sustainable growth: clients, candidates, team, operations, marketing, and strategy. Your personalized scorecard will reveal what's working and what's broken, and the fastest way to build a recruitment business that generates consistent 7-figure revenue month after month. Stop riding the revenue roller coaster and take the free scorecard now at recruitmentcoach.com/scorecard.
That's how I started, was literally picking up the phone. I had a list of 300 people. I would cold call offices from other banks. And I was just like, I got to go back to my roots. I got to go back to cold calling. I got to figure this out. Let me be honest, Mark, I don't like cold calling. I really don't. And I think people are surprised by that, because I'm like, easily, I talk to everybody. Like, I come from that super high competitive background, but I'm not going to sit here and lie.
Imagine if you made over $100,000 per placement, but there's just one catch. Each deal takes between 1 to 2 years to close and another 12 months to receive your full fee.
My first one that landed took about 2.5 years. It was a very large, it was a $2.2 million in production. It was a 6% at that time. So about $133,000, placement.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby. And my guest today is one of our clients, Darcy Smith, the founder of Rockland.
Once you start working with me, you can't get rid of me. Like, I am so involved. I don't have to have you sign an exclusivity because you are so annoyed with me. We are talking all the time that you have no chance of working with another recruiter.
Darcy specializes in guiding established financial advisors through the complexities of transitioning to another firm, often bringing hundreds of millions in business with them. These are not quick wins. Darcy is managing high-stakes deals where patience and trust matters more than speed.
I want to be like a person that everyone knows because of a name brand. I want to be pulled to something that I feel I can relate to versus just constant cold calling and constantly just running this hamster wheel of finding any open job.
In this episode, you'll hear how Darcy has balanced out the long placement cycles with multiple revenue streams. Plus, she shares how she built a huge social following by consistently posting original content.
So I've grown the TikTok channel to about 300,000, the Instagram channel to about 100,000. I needed money and I needed some other outlet. So when I first started posting on socials, I was just offering my services for $100 an hour. I'll write your resume. I'll do this. This is before, the AI, everything. I'm doing resumes. I'm doing interview coaching. I built that business up. And within a year, I was then charging $300 an hour. I made about $150,000 my first year in doing all the career coaching.
And she breaks down her exact playbook for creating video content quickly and easily.
You don't have to have any knowledge of video production. I've never used a software on how to like edit and cut things. I just use Instagram. Like, they have the tool where you just slide the little bar and it just like cuts the things you want out. And it's so simple.
She even reveals her simple strategy for being recommended by AI search tools. Right. Darcy, thank you for doing this. How are you?
I'm so good. Thank you so much for having me.
I have wanted to have you on the show for a long time, so I'm glad that we're doing it now. I think we've known each other for what, two, three years maybe?
Yeah, I think 3 years, 2023. So
okay.
Yeah, 3 years almost.
Fantastic. And we've met 3 times in person, twice in Florida.
Yes.
And once in Scotland, you and your husband were traveling and we got to meet up in Edinburgh, which was super fun.
That was so cool. Yeah, it was like amazing that it worked out to be able to meet you.
Absolutely. So let's start at the beginning, Darcy. How did you get into recruiting?
I love this question. I listened to your podcast, obviously, so a lot of us have a similar story. Mine starts from sports, honestly. So I was a soccer player in college. When I graduated from my master's, I got in touch with someone from a company called Athletes to Careers, which in my story, I end up working there, but rewind. So she finds me after my graduate program. I have no idea what I want to do, right? Like my focus was soccer. All I wanted to do was play soccer, but I knew I had to get an education. I finished up my MBA and I'm like, I don't even know what jobs are out there. My sole focus. So I get in touch with this recruiter. She kind of mentors me, talks to me about exactly what kind of jobs are out there. A lot of times athletes do really well in sales. So of course, like that's kind of a route. I end up going into a training position at a company called Cintas, very large company. They allow you to kind of work in a bunch of different areas, which is amazing. Of course, no one really stays at their first job. And so I had a friend that left Cintas and went to a recruiting firm. Of course, she goes, hey, come on over. It's great. Everyone's super nice. Everyone's super fun. I'm young. I'm in my 20s. I'm like, let's try it. You have no idea what you're getting yourself into.
Absolutely. And
you had a few people. I don't mind naming the firm. I'm a very open book. I worked for CyberCoders. It's a very well-known firm. Honestly, I had a pretty good experience. It's a very tough environment. 400 recruiters. You hit a gong when you get a sale. Like it is like your traditional recruiting. But I cut my teeth there. And honestly, I am so grateful for that. And it taught me so much. And so I literally just got into recruiting because I was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Didn't know what I didn't know, which was a great thing. I was like, I love people. I love talking. I get to help people get jobs. Like, this is amazing. I'm all about that. And and that's really how it started for me.
It's funny that you mentioned athletes to, what was it? What was the firm called?
Athletes to Careers.
Athletes to Careers. Because then you ended up working there, right?
I did. So after my experience at CyberCoders, which again, I lasted a year, which is pretty good there. They have a pretty high turnover as many of these big recruiting firms do. I had, great manager, great experience. But I was like, this is too big for me. I want to specialize. I want to be like a person that everyone knows because of a name brand. And I want to be pulled to something that I feel I can relate to versus just constant cold calling and constantly just running this hamster wheel of finding any open job. And so I called Athletes to Careers and I was like, look, I had an amazing experience getting placed by you guys in my first job. Now I have some recruiting experience under my belt. Like, can we talk? And of course they were like, yeah, come on, right away.
Absolutely.
And I still remember we met at like a salad shop. We had lunch with the two people that run the company. They own the company. And immediately I was like, I can do this. Like I'm putting my best foot forward, right? I'm like, I got this. And it was kind of a no-brainer. It's a draw situation. So they do kind of help you a little bit. I think it was like $40,000, maybe $35,000. And I was like, I can figure this out. I just got to bill enough to get over that hump, but I can figure this out. And so I just jumped 2 feet in and I was like, I can't fail if I just know I can't fail. And that was my mentality.
Absolutely. It's a cool concept, Athletes to Careers. I've never heard of that niche before. That's pretty specific. Although it's interesting because a lot of recruiting firm owners, if they're scaling, they do look for people who were top performing athletes because something about A, being part of a team, and B, being coachable, and C, being competitive. I think those are qualities that can lend themselves to this career. But I know you became a top biller there. Tell me that story. How did you end up doing so well, do you think?
Yeah. I definitely am a competitive person. The Athletes to Careers mentality too was like, we're going to also hire athletes because it's relatable. If I'm the recruiter, I'm working with athletes coming either right out of college or they are leaving their professional sport. So I worked with some professional athletes as well. And we become like a mentor and coach to them. Like I learned so much about writing resumes, how to present yourself in interviews. I'm doing interview coaching. I'm doing the full gamut, not just recruiting and finding a good person, Like to fill the job. And I think building those relationships where at my previous recruiting firm, it was all about as many transactions as you can get. What I really loved about, I call it A to C. What I really loved about them is that they really prioritize relationships. At my previous company, I would take candidates out to lunch and I would be yelled at like, hey, don't do that. That's a waste of time. Maybe send them a gift or build the relationship. But you don't have time to be going to lunch. Like we need you on the phones. We need you doing more. Whereas A to C was like, go to lunch, go into the universities, do resume. Like I would do these big resume presentations and I would get tons and tons of candidates from that. And so I loved the relationship part. I found like a very location niche. I moved up to the Bay Area. I was doing, you know, Los Angeles, Bay Area. I was kind of like working at specific universities. And that's really what like propelled me. And of course, like anyone else, right? You find your like top three or five companies that you just really, really want to work with. And you just are constantly on the phone with them, building relationship with them. I'm flying out, I'm doing lunch with them, I'm meeting them in person. And there's no reason they would go to any other recruiter. And so to answer your question of like, how did I get to that top biller? It was being in person. I think that was like the key. They're seeing my face. A lot of them would say to me, oh, we don't really get a lot of recruiters in the office. And I'm like, well, I need to see the office to make sure I can place candidates here and they're going to be happy here and the culture and all that stuff. And so I think that really led to me like finding my way in recruiting and ultimately getting to that top biller position.
Fantastic. Let's talk about the in-person thing a little bit, because it's funny. I think you're right. I don't know why more recruiters don't get in front of their clients. That seems like a no-brainer to me that it's easier to, especially, I mean, Zoom is fine and it's definitely the next best thing, but it still isn't the same as breathing the same air as somebody, right? And, you know, having coffee or lunch and shaking their hand, you're making physical contact with somebody, you're able to read their body language much better. They introduce you to other decision makers in the office while you're there, especially because you made the effort, right? To whether it's to fly or drive to go to their office, often they spend longer with you. Like on a Zoom call, people are like really watching the time and they are back-to-back meetings. Typically, if you're in front of somebody, they give you longer. You get the fuller picture, the fuller story. Like when you were going out in person, how far were you traveling and how did you make that worthwhile for, like to justify? I guess you gave the contrast of your previous firm where they're like, don't even go out of the office, just be on the phone. In your mind, how did you justify going out?
I think it has something to do with like, I'm in the beginning of my career. I need to prove myself. I need to make sure people know who I am. And this really leads into like how I've built my company now, which is Rocklin. So after when I left Athletes to Careers, it was an amazing experience. I sat down with the owners and, you know, it's a 12-person team. It's a lifestyle business. They weren't looking to really scale and like do more, which I completely understand. You know, like I have nothing bad to say about them. I just think for me, like what was next, right? I'm a top biller. I don't know where to go from here. Like I do want to own something. This is like my dream. And so I think it just made the most sense for me to leave. And in doing so, when I sat down and built out my business plan, I knew that like one of the top priorities for me was to be able to people see my face, people like to be in person. And to answer your question of like, how do you do that with, you're spending your money to potentially not get the prospect, right? Like not close the business. There's so many like variables here. And what I've started to do now and what I would like tell anyone is I get an upfront payment, which we would call like a contained search. So I get a non-refundable deposit. That's $5,000. This will go towards the placement if we decide to work together and there's a placement here. If it doesn't, it goes towards my time, my effort, all of the upfront research. Like I'm building a full job search strategy with this client. So if anything, they're getting something like from a consulting side of this that they feel like they're getting a really good deal on if it is that $5,000. I also feel like they have skin in the game. I'm spending my time on a flight. So that's like really like, I think that's worth it, right? Like that makes the most sense.
I love the way you just explained that. That's a really good argument for why it makes sense for the client to go that route and the contained model makes a lot of sense. So look, let me put a pin in that because I definitely want to talk more about your business model and how you work, Darcy. So, but tell me about the launching of your own business, because that again is like a leap of faith, isn't it? It's sort of, you're already successful at something and you're going to leave that and go and do something which you may not be successful at. What was that thought process? And how did you end up choosing? Because you end up going into financial services instead of, so how did you end up in, you know, choosing that? Something you didn't even have a background in.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's definitely part of my story. So at Athletes to Careers, it was, as you can imagine, many recruiting firms specialize in a specific thing, whether it's technology, biotech, you know, a specific industry. Flip that on its head. At Athletes to Careers, we focus on the candidate industry, which is athletes. And now we're working with any companies that want to hire our athletes. So I get access to so many different industries, which is tough, right? Like I'm learning about every industry possible in order to place these candidates, you know? And in doing so, I did get a lot of wealth management firms, insurance companies. Many of them loved hiring athletes. So I did have some knowledge of the space from Athletes to Careers, but definitely not what I do now. In the process of leaving Athletes to Careers, I had two industries that I really loved, wealth management and medical device sales. That was a big one for me. And so I was like, I know I'm going to start my company. There's no question about that. B, how am I going to have the money to do it? And then C, what am I going to do and how am I going to specialize? So the first step of that is I looked at what I typically bill and what I typically make take home per year. Great thing about recruiting is you can just put the pedal to the metal and go really hard. And in my mind, I told myself, if I can hit my goal that I typically have in 1 year, which at that point in my life was probably around like $200,000 of me, like making that money personally. I was like, if I can hit that in 6 months, I can give myself a good runway there to have 6 months to figure my, you know what, out in my own business. And so I did it. Like we were placing, just to kind of give an idea, because we're working with entry-level candidates, the average fee is maybe $10,000. So we're placing like 10 people a month. Like if you're really like crushing, I had a 12 person month
when I was a high volume.
It was,
man,
wild.
That's a lot of hustle.
Yeah, it was wild. My goal, like as a firm, our goal was to place 36 in 1 year, 36 people in 1 year.
Okay. So three a month.
Yeah. So if you can imagine, that's your target. That's your metric. So trying to hit, like, I would try and stay in that like 5 to 7 range and then pedal to the metal. I'm going, trying getting to 10, you know, people. So a lot of things had to come into place, but I was like, I'm figuring this out. So once I hit that mark, that was my decision. I was like, I'm doing this. Serendipitously, I get a call from someone I went to business school with. You know, it's all about network, right? I get a call from someone I went to business school with. He's a very good friend of mine. He's a market head at a large national wealth management firm. He's like, hey, Darcy, like any chance like you and your firm, like he's talking about like the firm I'm working at, could help us recruit financial advisors. So I start to ask him about like, what does that entail? What does that look like? It's a little bit different than just a typical W-2 job because these financial advisors have a book of business that you're moving. So I'm like, this is definitely outside the scope of like what my firm would want to do. That's really taking them out of this whole like athlete world. But I'm in the process of like starting my firm and I'm between these two industries. Tell me more. So I'm like, let me learn everything I can learn about this industry. I start consuming podcasts. I buy so many books, probably like 20 books. I'm a big believer in books. I just start learning, educating myself, figuring it out. In my mind, I can paint this picture and show people like I have such a different perspective because I didn't come from the industry. I'm now framing this as like, it's a positive. And I truly believe that I can see things that other people that are in it don't see. And so I can take my experience and then really focus. So then I lock down on, this is my industry. It's Darcy Smith. She's the wealth management recruiter. She's the financial advisor transitionist. She specializes in working with financial advisors. And that's how you know her.
I love it. That's cool. So you'd already decided you were going to start your own business. And then this opportunity kind of landed in your lap and you grabbed it.
Yep. So my first contract was a national contract with a very large wealth management firm, Wirehouse. And that's how I started, was literally picking up the phone. I had a list of 300 people. I would cold call offices from other banks. And I was just like, I got to go back to my roots. I got to go back to cold calling. I got to figure this out. And let me be honest, Mark, I don't like cold calling. I really don't. And I think people are surprised by that because I'm like, easily, I talk to everybody. Like, I come from that super high competitive background, but I'm not going to sit here and lie. I don't know. There's a few people that, you know, I've met in your worlds that actually love cold calling. Like, let's shout out to Mike.
Williams, that's right.
I don't like it. Like, I'm a normal human. I don't like rejection. But you do it, right? You just figure it out. And I mean, it's tough, but that.
You already understand the benefits of posting video content on LinkedIn. The problem is time. After all, you're a recruiter, not a full-time content creator. Trusted Voice Video is built for busy recruitment business owners who know that video matters, but they don't want another job added to their plate. One 30-minute session per month gives you 30 days of short-form video content. We plan the topics, guide the conversation, edit the footage, and deliver ready-to-post videos. You'll never be stuck wondering what to say. You'll never worry about how you look or sound. We coach you through the session so you come across as clear, confident, and credible, even if you hate seeing yourself on camera. My colleague Sanjay manages the whole process. He already produces this podcast and my own video content, so if you like my content, then why not let us create yours as well? If you want your content working for you 24/7, head to recruitmentcoach.com/video and book a free strategy call.
How I started. That's, yeah.
Let me just speak to the cold calling thing, because I think not many people enjoy cold calling, but I think, and it sounds like you came to this as well, is if you have a really good big goal that you're excited about, inspired to achieve, then it's like, it's a means to an end, right? It's like, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. Like, I guess it's quite, how badly do you want it, right? And if that is going to help you towards that goal, then you just pick up the phone and you deal with the rejection and you get better. And, you know, you start to actually get good at it. You may not love it, but there's a certain, I think there's a certain personal satisfaction of doing something hard, making yourself do something that is uncomfortable, that is difficult, that most people aren't willing to do, and actually getting good at it. I find satisfaction in that. What do you think?
I agree. I am a very big believer in, like, you can alter like the way your brain works. And if you keep telling yourself, I can't do this, and it's scary, and of course, that's what it's going to be. I remember like pacing around my room and like talking myself into it, like, it's no big deal. They pick up, they don't like me, who cares? They don't know me, you know, like, I'll just do it. It's fine. And like, I'm literally having to like work myself into this mode. Like, I wish someone was in that room just watching
I
me.
I can picture it. Well, you're getting yourself into state, right? You have to be at a higher energy level and be pumped up. And so, yeah, you have to think about, how can I put myself into that frame of mind where I've got the courage to, you know, call strangers. Yeah, I get it.
Nothing can be worse than being in a bullpen. I did that life. I worked as a salesperson for Cintas. I'm cold calling. Your manager standing over your shoulder, listening to you cold call. So you're already nervous, and now you're extra nervous because they're like, what are you saying? What are you doing? You know? And so nothing can be worse than that. So I just kept telling myself it could be worse. Like, I have the opportunity to make a lot of money by cold calling a stranger. I can do this. You know what I mean? Like, that's just what you have to tell yourself. And like I said, my end game isn't to always cold call. In my mind, that's a job. Like, I'm doing a job, which is continuously cold calling and trying to get people to come to me. I instead want to build something where people are wanting to come to me, which is why you build your podcast, right? Which is why we build our marketing tools. But like, until I get to that point, I have to cold call. So
there you go. I think that's a great way of thinking about it. Like, we're going to talk about building a brand, because that's something you are awesome at. And, you know, people, by the way, if you don't already follow Darcy on LinkedIn, go and check her out. As well as TikTok is where you're really huge, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Like, building a brand takes time, and you can't wait 3 to 6 months before you actually start making placements, right? So I think the outreach is a shorter term play to start making things happen while you're building your personal brand. Would that be fair?
Right. Completely.
So you had this opportunity, you started cold calling, building lists and cold calling these. what was it like, financial advisors or?
Yeah, financial advisors. I think giving some context to this side of, if you don't mind me jumping into this, giving some context into this side of recruitment, it's actually, I don't know if recruiting is the best term to use. It's billed differently than typical recruiting. And so in my job, like what I'm doing on a day-to-day, I'm reaching out to financial advisors, or they're reaching out to me at this point. And I'm working with them. They're usually, to make it easy, right? They're at a big bank. So we're talking Merrill Lynch, Wells Fargo, you know, these big wirehouse banks, and they have a book of business. So we would kind of view it as, how many assets under management are you actually managing? How many clients, how many households? And so once we understand that, then they're saying to me, hey, I'm frustrated, similar to any other job, right? I'm frustrated because of my manager. I'm frustrated because I don't have the technology I need. I'm frustrated because my clients want to be in certain investments that I can't provide to them. And that's where I sit down with them as more of a consultant, and we walk through the opportunities of where they could go. Now, this is where like the billing is all different, is I'm not getting a, you know, percentage of their quote unquote salary. I'm getting a percentage of what assets, like the actual book of business, are they moving from that firm to the firm that I'm placing them at. And so I love giving numbers. I love being very open about this stuff. And so from listening to your podcast, that's how I get a lot of, you know, my information. So I want to share this. The average fee in my world, if you can imagine a book of business, a very easy number to understand is like $100 million in assets, right? Like that's the book. The amount of money they're actually producing, we call that like a production number, is usually around 1%. That's like easy numbers. So you're taking like $1 million. So that production number is what I'm actually paid on. So if all of that million moves, I make about 8% of that. The range can go from 6% at the very lowest that I've seen up to 15%, which is incredible. Most of my clients are at 8% to 10%.
That's really cool. You're right. It's slightly different to the way most recruitment businesses work. The other aspect of that, though, is I would imagine, well, I can see a few challenges here. One is that kind of placement isn't going to happen in a couple of weeks, right? This is probably going to take months and months to actually realize. So how, when you're starting a business, how do you keep like cover your, you know, living expenses while you're waiting for one of these big fees to land?
Yeah. My first one that landed took about 2.5 years. So
wow,
to your point, yeah. It was a very large, I mean, it was a $2.2 million in production. So that was, you know, it was a 6% at that time. So about $133,000, you know, placement. So yeah, it's great, but huge long sales cycles. So to your point, I do both. So not, I come from recruiting. I'm amazing. I love recruiting. I love the culture side. Our industry in wealth management is known to be a bit toxic. There's a lot of people quitting, a lot of people unhappy, and there's got to be someone in there explaining like, why are people leaving? I'm not just here to replace this job. I'm here to understand why they left, what we need to do to fix it. And again, this goes back to that $5,000 that I make the clients pay up front, because we're going to fix this before we put someone else in here that's potentially going to leave. So I do traditional recruiting as well. So a firm, a team, a wealth management team that needs a client associate, which is similar to like an administrative assistant, but very specific to our industry. They have portfolio managers, they have traders, they have financial advisors that don't have a book of business, but they're just servicing the current book at that firm. And so those salaries and stuff, those range between $80,000 up to like $250,000. And on that, I'm charging 25% of first year's full compensation.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. So you're not just moving wealth managers with a book of business, but you have other types of roles that you're filling for those same clients. That all makes sense. Okay.
Day one, I'm doing probably 80% of my time is spent on the traditional W-2 recruiting. And now we're looking more towards like 60% financial advisor movement, 40% on the W-2 recruiting. And the goal is to really be in that space of financial advisory, you know, full term.
Got it. Okay, this is cool. I guess the second challenge I can see sticking with the financial advisors is there's no guarantee that their whole book of business is going to go with them to the new firm, right? What percent is not, would you typically expect to actually be able to port across?
Yeah, great question. It does depend on the type of firm they're coming from and how they built their book of business to begin with. If they were handed their book of business because they worked at a bank and that bank already had that book, the chances of that actually moving right with them, because the clients aren't going to be sticky to the advisor, probably 30 to 40% will actually move. We're talking someone that has built their book from scratch at a big firm, but it's their clients. I mean, that's 90% and above. It's really good numbers in terms of them moving. But to your point, what I do is a look back. So if it's an 8% fee, when the advisor first moves over, the client will pay me 4% on day one. After 12 months of that advisor being there, they will then pay me the next 4%. Now, sometimes that benefits me because the book has grown and they did move over all their clients. And sometimes, obviously, it shows good faith on my side of like, hey, if these didn't come over, then you're not paying for that.
Wow, interesting. But this is still a very long-term relationship then, right? Because you're not getting paid for maybe a couple of years on that. That's really interesting. Do they have like non-competes and that sort of thing? Is that an issue?
They do. You mean the advisor that would be moving?
Yeah.
Yeah. Luckily, I do most of my work in California. So it's a nice place to be for that. We have non-solicits and then we have very, very strict how you call your clients, what you say to clients. A lot of lawyers are involved in this, you know? But to your point, it's the biggest career move an advisor will do in their lifetime, for sure.
Okay, interesting. All right, Darcy, so tell me about this first year. You told me about the first, like you're just on the phone making those cold calls. How did things progress from there?
Yeah. So in the first year, I'm cold calling. I am also building my brand on Instagram and TikTok. I take everything I've learned from recruiting and I just start posting about it. Everything I know, how to write a resume, how to interview, what you should be looking for in a job, how to build a better culture. I mean, the amount of videos I have on there is wild. And I honestly didn't expect it to take off the way it did. I got very lucky, but I did put in the work. I was posting 3 videos a day. I was definitely...
That's not luck, Darcy. Posting 3 videos a day, like you really were grinding at that. And you've had millions of views, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I've grown the TikTok channel to about 300,000, the Instagram channel to about 100,000. I've since taken my foot off the gas there because Rocklin, the recruiting firm, has taken off, which is the goal the whole time. But I needed money and I needed some other outlet. So when I first started posting on socials, I was just offering my services for $100 an hour. And I was like, hey, like, I'll write your resume. I'll do this. This is before, you know, the AI, everything. Now when people ask me to write the resume, I'm like, don't pay me. Just have AI do it, right? Like, I'm not going to take your money. So I'm doing resumes. I'm doing interview coaching. I built that business up. And within a year, I mean, I was then charging $300 an hour. I made about 150 grand my first year in doing all the career coaching.
Oh, that's cool.
It was really cool. But let me tell you, having one foot in and one foot, you know, on both sides of the coin is like, it's tough. I knew my goal was Rocklin. I knew my goal was to like really focus on recruiting. And so it's hard when you're like, oh, I see another path here that I could be successful at, but I have to like rein it in and know like, no, my goal is this. And I say lucky because I do feel like very lucky in the sense that I did have that safety net of that's a lot of money. Like 150 grand is a lot of money to have as like a backup as I'm building Rocklin. And yeah, so that's why I did it. I wanted that extra cash. I wanted, you know, to, again, now I don't charge any, I don't do career coaching anymore. It's just a place for me to post videos. And I get so many messages every day from people that say, I binged your Instagram channel before my interview and absolutely crushed it. And that's what it's there for. Like, it's all free. It's just, yeah. So
that must feel great. Like, you're helping people who you've never met.
Yeah.
And will never meet and maybe never even speak to. And you help them to get a new job. That's pretty cool.
No, it's incredible. And it's hard because it is a lot of time. And so there's a part of me that's like, I need to keep doing this because it's helping people. But there's also the part of me that's like, I need to push on the other side of things and not spend my time on that. So it's a fun little balance. But I will say, like, it's something I'm very, very proud of. Like, I don't take it lightly that like building that brand was like, you know, a big piece of my life. And so there is a bit of pride in that. So that was my first year. It was doing the career coaching, doing the posting on socials, and then building Rocklin. Third placement in Rocklin actually came from a woman saw my Instagram, which was about interviewing and all this kind of stuff. She booked a call, a career coaching call for her husband, who happened to be a financial advisor. How perfect is that? Yeah. And so, of course, I was like, I'm working with him. I'm like, hey, like, I don't mean to, like, this is maybe a conflict of interest here because I'm not trying to make money on both sides, but I do have an opportunity that I think you'd be great for. Fast forward, I mean, incredible. He's promoted 3 times now. He's a director of financial planning. He's absolutely crushing. And, you know, still to this day, he's like, you changed my life. Like, I'm so glad my wife found your Instagram. So really cool story. Yeah.
That is cool. So you started cold calling, then you started posting videos. Let's talk a little bit about that because I see you're now on LinkedIn posting videos. So high five there.
Yes, thank you.
fantastic stuff.
That's you, Mark. Thank you.
Well, I certainly encourage you to do that. But the actual, you know, the reps that you'd already done of putting videos together is what's, I think, you know, served you really, really well because all that practice. What would you say to people who are like, they can understand the value of, you know, producing videos for whatever channel they want to be active on, but they're scared to put themselves out there or worried they're going to like sound dumb or they don't like the way they, you know, look on camera or they have like, they don't know if anyone's going to be interested in what they have to say. Like what would you advise someone who's having all these kind of negative thoughts about it?
Yeah. My biggest piece of advice here is when you're talking to a candidate, when you're, I mean, anyone that's listening to this, whatever aspect you do that you're the expert in, whenever I talk to a candidate or a client, I immediately go through my notes. And now what I do is in those notes, I then use AI to say, how can I build a video from this? So just like, because then you're not looking back and saying like, am I saying something that's dumb or not right? Like, no, I'm saying something that I've already talked about. I feel matter of fact about, I've expressed this to a client because I believe in it. So now I'll post that video on it. So I do think that that's a great way to make sure you're saying, because yeah, if you sit there you're like, okay, I'm going to make a video. And then you're like, what am I going to talk about? And then you start to question yourself, right? And the other thing I'll say is you don't have to have any knowledge of video production of using, I've never used a software on how to like edit and cut things. I just use Instagram. Like they have the tool where you just slide the little bar and it just like cuts the things you want out. And it's so simple. So don't worry about editing and things like that. The only thing you have to do is have your phone, have good, you know, a light behind it. And I, for the longest time, just used a window. And then you just hold it up and say your video. And people actually feel more connected to you when it's not this big production. I've found that's what really led me to like building these relationships. Because when you hold your phone and when you're right there, like you're talking to the person one-on-one. And
yeah, it feels very personal, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the more research you do, they say like, okay, you can act like you're, you know, you're eating lunch, you're taking a sip of your water, or you're doing these things that are just like what you would be doing in front of your friend. And that's how you want to speak to, instead of coming at it from this like, I'm so much better than you because I've produced this great video and I know all. Like, take that away, right? Like, just feel like this is what I want to explain to someone in my industry, and then just talk like that. And I think that like relieves that pressure.
This is brilliant. I agree with you. It's people listening will have expertise. Think about how many conversations you have every day with clients, with candidates about talent in your niche that you serve. You know, those conversations you're already having, that is the same stuff you could produce videos about. I loved your tip about AI. So is that coming from transcripts of calls that you ask? And are you Team Claude? Are you Team ChatGPT? What are you using?
I'm Team Gemini.
Gemini. Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. So How are you using Gemini to give you video suggestions?
Yeah. So I'll take the clip or the portion of the notes from a call I had and then literally just copy and paste. I mean, of course, I'm very diligent about like not having names and not having information, but I'll post like, this is the topic I talked about. can you please create a, I usually give it a time frame. So if I want my video to be under a minute or if I want it to be under 2 minutes, give me a hook, give me a close. Here's what I do. Like, here's my job. So they know exactly like where you're coming from as the expert, and they will build the script for you. And of course it's never perfect, but it's much easier than building it yourself.
Brilliant. And then are you using a script like on one of those apps on your phone, or are you just basically taking the key points from it? How are you, what's your process?
Yeah, everyone's different here, right? I actually don't use any sort of script. I've never read a teleprompter or anything of the sort. I just kind of go based off, you know, but I cut the video. So I only need to remember one line at a time, or, you know, two lines at a time. And so I'm still using the script from the sense of like making sure I hit the points. But yeah, but then I'm just pausing the video and then replaying it. But that way I can look directly at myself or at the camera. And it just makes me feel more comfortable.
Got it. So you've got your talking points, your recording on your phone, you've got the light source, the window or whatever behind your phone, and you're checking your notes and then delivering a sentence or two, and then you can recheck your notes, deliver the next line, and then you're actually editing that within Instagram.
Yep. Most of the time, I just do it within Instagram or TikTok. I found that TikTok has a really easy feature as well. If you don't want to post on TikTok, right, like just use it for the editing because it's free. And yeah, then you can just press play, pause, and you can do a 10-minute video. So it's plenty of time to work with to like be able to cut things out. And it's funny because I wish someone was like in my room to like seeing me. I'll be like, I'll say it. And then I'm like, oh, no. And then I'll like go like this with my hand. So I know when to like cut the video, right? Or like the next, and I'm like, okay, I already did this. So now I got to do like the, like move my hands or wiggle my hands. And so it's, and then I can film, it's repetition, right? But I can film, edit, post within 30 minutes.
Awesome. That's cool. And these days, how, now that Rocklin has taken off and you're like mainly focused on that, how often are you posting videos at the moment?
Don't call me out, Mark. I need to do better. I have committed to like, when I'm doing a video, I will name it as a series, which is for my own benefit. If I say I am posting 4 videos in this series, then there's no question I have to do it.
That's
right?
A good idea.
Yeah. So my last
one I did. It creates accountability that way.
Yeah. Once a week is my goal. So last time I did a four week series once a week. And then I went on vacation. So now, you know, that was my week off. And now I'm going to do another 4 weeks. So that feels doable for me. And I think whatever feels doable, if it's once a month in the beginning, like just, you know, try it, get yourself out there. But I'm a firm believer in finding your thing. If video isn't your thing, find your other thing, right? It doesn't have to be for everybody, but it doesn't, you don't know until you try it. So
yeah, definitely. I agree 100%. It's funny what you said about the, if someone watched you in the room, how many like times you're going like this. My team think it's hilarious. They like putting together blooper reels of me messing up my words, and they think it's funny, which it is kind of funny, but also they publish it to show people that you don't have to be an amazing like presenter or like comfortable on camera to still make videos, because you just cut out the stuff that, you know, where you made a mistake and it's no big deal.
Right. Yeah.
So, okay. What else has been critical to your success at Rocklin, Darcy? Like, fast forward to today, what are the things that you think have been critical to your success?
Yeah, I still knock on wood because in November I hit 5 years with Rocklin, which is like
congratulations.
Such a huge, thank you. Such a huge milestone. And to any listeners, like in my first like year to 2 years, I actually joined Mark's program, which honestly is like a huge catalyst to like giving me the confidence. So thank you for that. Not to like,
thanks,
you know, to you, but honestly, tooting your horn there. So I would say a big, this is like something that a lot of people have questioned. And when I work with coaches, they were like, I don't know if you should do that. And I stuck to my guns. So what I did was I decided not only am I going to niche down so specifically into wealth management, this means I wasn't doing anything that touched wealth management. I wasn't doing finance, no controllers, no finance, no banking, none of that. I'm not doing insurance, literally just wealth management advisory. So that's a very, very small niche. Now, this is where it gets a little bit crazy is not only did I do that, I then said, I'm going to go even smaller and I'm only going to work in California. So anything that comes my way that's outside of California, I've built relationships. I'm passing that along. That has built my network incredibly.
That's cool.
Yes. And so that is, you can get on people's calendar by saying, hey, I do this. I'm an expert in California. I'm looking for a New York partner. Of course, they want to jump on a call, right? Like that's a referral source. So then I'm learning from that person because this is my first year or two. So I'm learning from that person. How, you know, what are you doing? Like, how have you been successful, right? I'm calling people in all different parts of the nation to start to learn from them. And I'm offering something as well, which I think is important. So building my business as the California wealth management person. Whenever someone comes to me, a financial advisor or a financial advisory firm, I say, how did you find me? And they say, oh, ChatGPT, I Googled California wealth management recruiter. I'm like, great. You were the first one that came up, which is incredible because there's plenty of large firms out there, you know, so me coming up first is amazing.
That is. Now, okay, wait, there's a lot to unpack here. First of all, I agree 100% with niching down and focusing the way you have wealth management and even within California. I think that's brilliant. I also like the way that you have, now the reason people don't want to do that is because they're like, but what if, exactly the scenario you said, like what if one of my clients is also recruiting in this other city? I don't want to lose that business. Well, you've set up a network so that you can still make some money from those referrals and help your client, but without diluting your focus, which I think is genius, Darcy. That's fantastic. And there was something else that you said that I wanted to follow up on. ChatGPT. Is that intentional or is it just a product of how much content you're putting? Like, how did you make sure you were being found within the AI search?
Yeah, completely intentional. I've done a lot of research using Gemini, honestly. They have their deep think feature and trying to figure out like, how do I come up on your AI platforms? And then I don't know any of this stuff, right? I just literally copy and paste what Gemini tells me to my web developer and say, okay, hey, put this in the background of whatever you got to do. And then they do it okay. And it works. So, you know.
Okay. Yeah. This is smart. It's funny because we are starting to get leads from ChatGPT now. And because we always ask, where did you find us? Usually it's the podcast. Sometimes it's just random Google searches. Sometimes it's like a referral or LinkedIn or whatever. But more often now, people are finding us in a AI chat. So you're researching the techniques in Gemini and then telling your web developer to implement it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't need to be the expert in everything and I am perfectly okay with that. But what I need to be is the expert in something. And that is, you know, that is my thing. And I feel so confident. I mean, where I am now to year one, like I can't even express to you, you know, we all start somewhere. And my first manager at CyberCoders told me, you'll get the most information from just doing the job, like asking questions, asking the candidates questions. And I was so nervous about that. 'Cause I'm like, I'm supposed to be the expert helping them get a job. What do you mean I have to ask them like what that software is? Like what? And I just went for it. I was like, oh, like my apologies. You know, this is one of the first times I've been working this particular job. Like, can you explain to me exactly what you mean by XYZ? And every candidate is always so open to that. Like you come with some vulnerability, they're open to that. And so when I'm doing like anything with AI or anything with web development, I'm not trying to be the expert, right? But I do own my company, which means you are the marketing, you are the everything. You're not just the recruiter. So, you know, you kind of have to take that on and then use the tools that you have. And that's, you know, what I do.
Fantastic. I love it. So tell me about the contained model, how you came to that, and then, you know, how that works a little bit.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked because I want to give credit where credit is due. This is a perfect opportunity to say part of what I was just explaining is calling up competitors and telling them, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm doing it in California. You're in this state. Can I refer business? So shout out to the Judson Group. They're incredible people. He was the one that actually said like, hey, like you should think about like, because I was doing, you know, I wasn't doing retained. I wasn't doing contained. I was just doing contingency searches. He was like, you should maybe think about doing this model, you know, like some type of upfront, that gets skin in the game. And I was like, incredible. Immediately implement, Darcy, you know, like immediately. So shout out to them. That was, you know, how I built that contained model. It first started as a deposit. It's now moved to a non-refundable deposit, which I think is huge. I also started with just charging on base salary. Thanks to Mark Whitby and his team, I now charge on full first year's compensation. So all things that, you know, you just learn and you don't look back. You don't say, oh, I wish I did that sooner. You know, no, you just implement and move forward.
Love it. And so what percentage of your business now is the contained model versus contingent?
Once I work with a firm that's already used me as a search, has seen my value, knows that I'm taking the time to go to their office, I usually, for the next role that's coming, you know, sometimes if they feel like, hey, if I'm giving you this $5,000, I know I'm going to interview and be in this. But sometimes I'm just like, hey, I know you're going to pay. We've already worked together. So let's just do it contingent. But to probably 90% is contained. I pretty much won't do a contingency unless it's the advisor side is very, very different. So I want to make that clear. For the W-2 actual recruiting, 90% of it is going to be a contained model with that non-refundable deposit. On the advisor side, you can't really do that, right? Because it's a different sales cycle.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes total sense. And why did you arrive at $5,000 as the non-refundable deposit?
It's what the Judson Group said. So I was like, sure, I'll implement that. I feel like it's enough to cover my expenses and like some searches and me flying out to somewhere. But it's not so much that feels, you know, people do the one-third. You know, I think it's worked for me. People love it. They don't balk at it at all. And it's very much like, that sounds fair. And I love that. I want it to be fair. So to me, $5,000 is enough for them to keep skin in the game. They want to interview. They want to make this move forward. They don't want to lose that $5,000. Yes. But, you know, not so much where they're like, you know, they're all scared now and you're starting off on a weird foot.
I think you're right. You use the term skin in the game. It shows they're serious, right? And that they're not going to waste your time. I think that's the biggest, you know, it's a way of qualifying the search to make sure they're serious. And if I work on it, I'm not going to be wasting my time. So, but it's, as you say, it's low enough that it should be a pretty easy decision for them. And, so it's easy for them to say yes to. I think the amount isn't as important as just getting some kind of money up front, right? And whatever amount that is. And so, you know, good on you. That is fantastic. When do you get pushback? And if so, how do you respond to it?
I do get pushback, or I get questions of like, why? But it's a very simple explanation. And once I tell them, like, it's my time, it's look at it like a consulting fee. We're going to walk through exactly what hasn't worked, how we can make this better. My joke that I tell every single client that I work with, and it's not really a joke, but I think it's funny, is like, once you start working with me, you can't get rid of me. Like, I am so involved. I don't have to have you sign an exclusivity because you are so annoyed with me. We are talking all the time. That you have no chance of working with another recruiter. Like, you don't want to have to do all this work again with another recruiter. So I never worry about them getting candidates from other resources. However, the $5,000 does protect me if their brother's friend knows someone that is a perfect fit, right? That happens. And like, of course, I want them to hire that person. So you know what? I will be there when you onboard this person. I'll be there. I'll make sure that it's good. I'll make sure it goes with the onboarding plan we want to implement. And I'm going to be that partner to you, even though I only made $5,000, because the next time an opening comes around, you're calling me right away.
Okay. This is interesting. So tell me about that then. So, because that's maybe a little bit unexpected. So you're saying that they've paid you $5,000 deposit, then they hire their friend's brother or brother's friend or whatever it was. And you're still supporting that hire?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. To me, this isn't a transaction. This is a long-term relationship. And I was in this from the beginning. When you committed to me with this $5,000, I was in this to make sure that we're going to make this person work. And even though that person came from not me, I'm going to be the one that's there and making sure that that person's happy. They can call me when they're feeling overwhelmed. because I know exactly what this job should entail because I built the job description. I built the onboarding plan. I know when like things aren't working out. I think it's really important as recruiters that we make both the candidate and the client responsible for what they have came to the table with and what they have promised. So all my candidates know they can call me at any time and say, hey, like, I'm not getting the training I was supposed to be getting. This isn't happening. I'm uncomfortable coming into their office and telling them I'm unhappy, but Darcy, I'm going to call you so you can have that conversation and we can make sure this works. And that's why, like, I have such, you know, knock on wood, but like, I think two people in my 5 years haven't made it past that 90 days. And that happens, right? Like, I'm happy to say that it wasn't good hires. You know, we learned from it. Both of those clients still want to work with me because they saw the effort that was put in. And I was the one saying, like, we got to cut this. Like, let's move on. Let's go. Like, let's figure this out. And we'll be better.
That's, you know, cool. Yeah. As opposed to normally the recruiter saying, just hang in there, it'll be fine, and trying to like keep them going. And you're like, nope, let's move on.
Nope. And like, you know, I'm very stern with the 90 day. Like, I do a 90 day, I'll refund, you know, which is not typical for recruiters. We typically, you know, I'll replace. If I can't replace, if I can't hold my end of the bargain, then I will refund. You know, depending on how long that was, like, I do, you know, sometimes it's 70%, sometimes it's 90%. But I'm very reasonable in that. And I think like, that's why clients trust me and like want to continue to work with me. And they're the first ones to say like, no, you did so much work. Like, you do deserve that money. And we're also going to pay you for this next hire.
Fantastic. So they actually talk you into not refunding the money.
Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes. I think like that's what partnership's all about, right? I think we both have to come to the table with like open arms. I'm a small business, you're a small business. Like, we're trying to support one another. And what's the best way that we can do that? And how can I help? And I think I'm different, right? Like, I'm taking my time. I'm sitting with the candidate after they've been placed, making sure that their training is proper. Like, I am in the office and like, I'm helping them with onboarding. Like, that's not a typical recruiter.
You're physically there to help them with onboarding?
Yeah, not all the time.
Okay.
This isn't like a part of like, you know, this is what you get, but I have seen from what you've told me, the training is where you're losing people. So let me step into this. Let me see what's going on. Let me be there for them. Let me go to lunch with them. Let me make sure that this is working. Like, we all have skin in the game here. We want this to work. Like, if this is what I need to do to make sure it works, like, I'm there, you know? That's so important to me.
So it sounds like you're really embedding yourself with those clients and being indispensable to their whole hiring process. What's been the ROI on that?
In terms of them staying? It's
tangible benefit of, because that's, I think what some people listen might go, whoa, that sounds like Darcy's doing so much work above and beyond introducing the candidate. And is it worth it?
I mean, to me, it's, you can't quantify a client emailing you and saying, I've never seen a better experience, never had a better experience working with a recruiter. Like, that's all I need. You know, I get a call that's like, this has been, I don't know how I would have done it without you. You know, like, that is the ROI for me. I think too, like, I don't want to throw so much out there that's wild, but a part of my process that every single client I work with, I make a promise to them that they will not receive a candidate from me that I haven't met in person or met via Zoom. So I'm not spending 15, 20 minutes on a phone screen and then sending the resume. Like, I am spending time, quality time, understanding exactly what this candidate is about before I send them to my client.
Okay, interesting. I really like that. Are there any other differentiators or part of your process that clients are impressed by?
Oh, good question. That's on my website too. When you look at my process, it says like Rockland does video screens with the candidate before presenting to you. I think they really appreciate the upfront work that goes into it. So I build the job. If they need a job description and they don't already have one, I'll help build that. I help build the onboarding. Another thing I do, this is probably a lot of recruiters do this, but I will introduce like certain aspects that they may need, whether it's a fractional COO or a fractional, you know, sales coach or something that the business needs that I think is going to help them succeed and help them grow. That's a big piece, you know, of my network that I'm sharing. And yeah, and then the joke of, you know, once you work with me, you can't get rid of me. Like, I am there afterwards. Like, all of my process includes not just the first 30 days, not just the first 90 days. Every single candidate I'm talking with in that process, or I'm taking them out to lunch. And then after a year, I have it on in my CRM. It sends out an automatic message, right, to the candidate. Hey, you've been here a year. Like, let's jump on a Zoom call and talk about it. Then that gets me back in front of the client to say, hey, here's the check-in, here's the thing. And then of course the client's like, hey, we have another job. So it's like,
smart. That's a great takeaway right there, Darcy. Like, I think I understand what happens, because recruiting is extremely busy, pressurized, deadline driven, target driven. And so you make a placement and you're like, big check in the box. Okay, great. I've managed to fill that one. Now I'm on to the next thing. So I like the fact you've got that reminder to go back, because there's so much opportunity there, apart from it just being a nice thing to do. Like, the candidate will be impressed, the client will be impressed, and you'll probably get more business, and you'll probably get referrals out of that, right?
Yeah. Shout out to Recruiter Flow, because that's what I use. So
there you go. All right. Yeah. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other thing that we encourage our clients to do is like case studies. And what having that follow up a year on allows you to do is, like, let's say you place 10 people. Hopefully they're all going to be good hires and be performing well, but probably there's going to be one, two, or three who have absolutely crushed it, right? And so you're getting an opportunity to uncover those stories, and then that can become part of your marketing to say, oh, we placed a person and within their first 12 months, here's what they accomplished. Then you're getting so much more insight into the impact, the commercial impact that your placements are having, rather than just being able to say, we filled this in, you know, 23 days. That's okay as a success story, but it's not as good as talking about what difference the candidate really made with that company.
Correct. And I do the video, I think, asking the candidate if they're willing to give a few words on what their experience is like and, you know, how that happened, and then the client as well. And so, of course, you know, video testimonials are super powerful, but having it as a case study is nice too.
Yeah, the video testimonial is great, great idea. Darcy, is there anything that we haven't talked about today that you wanted to share?
I think the only other thing is, like, I'm just so excited to, like, as my business scales, because I built this, like, so specific to California and so specific to wealth management, now as I'm going to grow that, like, I'm going to step away from the California roots and I'm going to start expanding into, like, multiple cities and multiple states.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. And so I kind of look at it like Amazon, right? They start with books and they become the specialists in everything at books, and they open it up. And, like, I just feel like this 5-year mark has been that for me of, so anyone that's worried about niching down, like, I think the thing that I always told myself is, you can always change. You can always adjust, right? And so for me, it's like, I've built this. I feel very specialized and expert at this. Now let's, like, scale it and let's see where it goes. So
let's. All right, yeah. That's exciting, Darcy. So, yeah. What sort of people are you looking for to go on this journey with you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking. Well, for one, I don't know. I have so many thoughts in my head. We're going through a rebrand right now. So I'm rebranding to kind of target more of the full nation of it, right? As I continue to scale, like, I do want other people that can do what I do, right? Like, go into the offices, I can be there. I can't be everywhere all the time. But yeah, I mean, the first step is making sure that I build the brand in such a way that I'm being seen as that expert financial advisor transitionist, and then start to grow in terms of team and scale from there.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, be sure to connect with Darcy, follow her on LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok. And Darcy, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for doing it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
What was your biggest takeaway from that conversation? If you're watching on YouTube, please let me know in the comments. For me, here are my top two. Number one, turn your conversations into content. Don't overthink content. Use what you're already saying day in and day out. Darcy takes real client and candidate conversations, runs them through AI to create a simple script with a hook and a close. Then she records the videos on her phone. She edits directly in Instagram or TikTok. Her rule is simple: film, edit, and post within 30 minutes. Consistency beats perfection. Takeaway number two is use an upfront engagement fee to create commitment. Darcy charges a $5,000 non-refundable deposit. And I love the way that she explains it to clients. She tells them, this goes towards the placement, but it also covers my time, research, and building a full hiring strategy. And she also explains that this gives you skin in the game, and I'm investing my time, I'm flying out, and I'm betting in your business. So that language and that framing shifts the relationship from transaction to a true partnership. If you enjoyed this episode, please remember to subscribe, and I'll see you next time.